This is Digital Story Podcast number 839, April 19th, 2022. Today's theme is Camera Bag Odd Couple, GFX plus MFT. I'm Derek Story. I'm planning a couple outdoor pre-flight camping trips in preparation for our upcoming Eastern Sierra workshop. And I had to laugh when I looked down into my camera bag. What I saw was the photography version of the odd couple. How did I end up here? Stay tuned for the first story on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. This is interesting to me in the sense that, you know, photography is always evolving. And during the pandemic, I definitely had one set of gear that I was leaning on, just very light, very nimble. I was shooting with an infrared camera a lot, Olympus EM10 Mark III, very compact, and a Fujifilm X100V because, you know, I wasn't going places and I was just sort of hanging out. And those cameras worked fantastic in those situations. And then as things started to return to normal a bit, which I'm totally thrilled about, by the way, and I'm able to get out. I'm going on photo assignments now. I'm getting hired again. Things are happening. I have live workshops. My kit is once again on the move. And plus, I have new gear. I hadn't bought new gear in the longest time. And I had been waiting for the new Micro Four Thirds camera, which finally came about. And so I said, okay, you know, I'm retooling and having the proper kit for the type of assignments that I have now and will have in the near future, which is more on the go, more workshops, more event photography, all that kind of stuff. So as I'm putting together my kit with my new gear, with the stuff that I'm going to be using, I had this moment where I just look down inside the bag and I go, that is an odd couple if I have ever seen it, because for an upcoming camping trip, which is something that I'm going to use to prepare for the Eastern Sierra workshop, which even though we don't overnight camp during the Eastern Sierra workshop, we're out in the field a lot. And it's almost in a way like day camping, if you know what I mean. I have to be prepared for the elements and to also help the participants be comfortable in the elements. So the way that I prepare for that is, you know, I go camping with my current rig and then say, okay, how does this work? How does that work? It's a bright sunny day. You know, does this awning that I've created, does that work well? You know, all that kind of stuff. So I also prepare by testing camera equipment for the shoot, not only for me to use during the workshop. I don't shoot a lot during the workshop because I really want to stay focused on what the participants are doing, but so that I test stuff so that when people ask me questions, I go, yeah, this would work really well. You probably won't need that, you know, that kind of stuff. There's a lot before the actual events that go into play. And, you know, this is something that actually I really enjoy because this is my chance to get out in nature by myself with my camera gear, with my camping gear, and, you know, just have a nice quiet time figuring out, you know, how I'm going to approach things that are on the horizon. So that's what I'm preparing for right now. I have one of these little camping trips coming up in May, actually, and I start way ahead of time to make sure I have everything I need, because on the test trip itself, I want to be as prepared as possible so that if I did forget something, then I go, okay, now I can add that to the list. But I don't want to be lax about it and say, oh, yeah, sure, I'd remember to bring that. It doesn't work that way, does it? It doesn't. All right. So I'm looking down into my camera bag that I'm preparing for this next trip. I had the Fujifilm medium format, the GFX, in there. And I had the OM system, OM-1 camera in there with a handful of lenses for the OM-1. And I go, so funny, you know, here I have the Micro Four Thirds, which is the most portable professional level kit that you can carry. And then the GFX, which is on the large side for a professional level kit. And so why do I have these two cameras in there? Why don't I have just an extra Micro Four Thirds body, or why don't I go all medium format, or, you know, all that kind of stuff? Well, there's a couple reasons, and I'm going to go over those right now. The bottom line for me these days is I don't want to shoot with anything that I don't absolutely love. And this became really clear to me when I was in the Humboldt Redwoods. First time I'd been in a physical workshop for a bit. On that workshop, I just took the GFX 100S, the medium format camera, because the OM-1 hadn't arrived yet. I was hoping it would. It hadn't arrived yet. And I said, I'm just going to go out there with the camera. I really like the current setup I have for it. Oh, sure, I may need this or I may need that. But you know what? I don't care. I don't care. I just want to go with what feels really enjoyable to me right now. And I came back with fantastic pictures. I had a good time every moment. And I'm just going, this is a combination that I really like. Really enjoying the gear that I have and then making it work in a very relaxed way. The GFX, I've had this camera for about, a year now. And at first, I have to tell you, I didn't warm up to it right away. And part of the problem was I only had one lens for it. And it was the 80mm f1.7, which is a fantastic lens. Got it for professional use for portraits, because that's what I was getting ready to do once the pandemic lifted. But it's not a lens that I would carry around. So I found that I was only using that camera in very specific situations. I wanted to use it more. It was too good of a camera. So the big breakthrough that I had was when I bought the 50mm, which they call a pancake. But you got to remember, this is a pancake in medium format terms, right? So it is a pancake compared to other medium format lenses, not compared to our Micro Four Thirds. But what happens is when I put the 50mm on there, which works out to be a 40mm focal length in full frame terms, which is one that everyone knows I love. I put that on there. The camera itself wasn't much bigger than a DSLR or many of the pro level mirrorless bodies by Nikon, Sony, and Canon. So with that 50mm on there, I could, you know, put that in the bag and it just fit in there just alongside everyone else. And I go, well, this is kind of neat. I like this. And I really like that 50mm lens. I have to tell you, I've really fallen in love with it. It's compact. It's light. It's sharp. It's colorful. It's all the things that you want in terms of image quality. It has a wonderful aperture ring that's in 1/3 click stops. And I just shoot with this camera in aperture priority all the time. That's just the way I shoot with it. In fact, the way I set this camera up in Humboldt was I put it in RAW plus JPEG and I used the Velvia film simulation, aperture priority. I let ISO just be an auto ISO, go wherever it wants, because it really doesn't make any difference with this camera if the ISO is at 200 or 1600. So I just put it in auto ISO, let it do its thing. And with that equivalent 40mm lens, it just kind of forced me to sort of see the world in a certain way, photograph things in a certain way. And because I had so much image resolution that if I couldn't get as close to a subject as I wanted, it wasn't a problem because I could crop the heck out of those files and still end up with a huge file, still end up with plenty of resolution to make a 13 by 19 print or whatever I wanted to do. So I just felt like it was a very enjoyable camera that forced me to slow down a bit. The image quality was just crazy. And when you're in the Velvia film simulation and you're in a forest or somewhere where there's a lot of green, the green is amazing. It is beautiful. It is the most beautiful green that I've ever gotten out of the camera from that particular camera. It's just spot on and beautiful. I was taking these nice leisurely walks with the camera and photographing things that caught my eye and just very much enjoying myself. And it worked out great. I didn't feel like I needed any other lens on those walks and that I just, came away with pictures that I like. Now, I'm not going to shoot with that camera all the time. And that's why when you look down into my camera bag for my adventure trips, I have the OM-1 in there with four or five lenses because I do want to shoot other things. But there are moments on every trip, just when you want to take a nice 1 hour walk and just enjoy yourself, where that camera is perfect. It fits right in with being mellow and communing with nature. And when you do take a shot, you have a very good chance of it being outstanding. So, you know, it just works on a lot of different levels. And the other thing that I discovered was that when I'm out on adventures, I'm not in the same mode all the time. Sometimes I'm in a kind of casual, enjoy nature mode. And other times I'm in a, wow, there's a lot going on right now and I want to get as much of it as I can. And I'm shooting in burst mode with long lens and all that kind of stuff. There are these different modes. I'm not in the same mode all the time. And the GFX just works perfectly in some of the modes that I most enjoy. So there's that camera. So we'll just put a bookmark there for a moment. And then now I also have the OM-1. And the thing about the OM-1, you know, I've talked about it already, previous shows, is that it is so nimble and so smart and has such good lenses that you can use it, or I can use it, to tackle just about anything that I want to tackle. So the lenses that I pack for nature, outdoor, adventure, all that kind of stuff, I lean on four lenses primarily, and I'm going to give you those four right now for the Micro Four Thirds. The new 12-40 f/2.8 Pro, and it's the Pro 2, the 40-150 f/2.8 Pro. Now, they have the 40-150 f/4 out as well, which is more compact. But the reason why I like having the f/2.8 version, even though it's a little bit bigger, that extra f-stop allows me, if I want, to put a 1.4 teleconverter on that lens to stretch out the magnification even more to like 420 millimeters equivalent, I believe. And I can give up that one stop for the teleconverter and still be at f/4. So I like having the f/2.8 on that lens just to give me that option of having the teleconverter or using the teleconverter if I want. And I do bring it along with me. And then the 17 millimeter f/1.8 lens. And then the fourth lens that is almost always in the kit for outdoor adventure is the Rokinon, actually 7.5 millimeter ultra wide fisheye lens. And sometimes you just want that really, you know, that expansive view, that super wide view. And that lens does a very nice job. It's a manual focus lens, but you don't really need an autofocus lens at that focal length. It's not really necessary. So then with those lenses, along with features such as Live ND, Starry Sky, fast burst rate, super compact body, and all that, then I can really tackle the other parts of photography that I want to. Now, sometimes I might bring the 60 millimeter macro lens as well, because that Olympus macro lens is really good. And I have the 30 millimeter, I have them both. So sometimes I will put that in as well for my fifth lens, if I feel like I want to shoot some really nice close-up photography. It sort of depends on where I'm going, if I'm going to bring that lens or not. The thing about both of these cameras, whether it's the GFX or the OM-1, they're both weather-resistant. The 50 millimeter lens for the GFX is weather-resistant, and my 12-40 and my 40-150, those are both weather-resistant as well. So that allows me to shoot in just about any kind of condition without worrying about it, because a lot of times you can get really great pictures in really bad weather. And I want to be able to do that. So then that sort of leads us to, okay, when do I pick which camera, right? When do I pick which? So I have this kit that has the GFX in it with just one lens, the prime lens on it. And then the OM one with four lenses, maybe five if I decide to bring the macro or not. When do I pick up one or the other? Well, I've kind of already articulated that a little bit, but there still are some more nuances to go with it. Let's say on a typical three-day adventure, I would probably use the Fujifilm two, maybe three times for, you know, those moments when I just really feel like this is the camera that I want to have with me and I'm in that particular mood. The rest of the time, I'm going to be shooting with the Micro Four Thirds because, you know, that's where, okay, one moment, I might want to have the telephoto on there and capture some bird photography or some, you know, distant landscape photography. And then another moment, I might want to have the fisheye on there, or I might want to be just, you know, starting out with the 12 to 40 for general nature photography and have that on there and not worry about, you know, the weather or anything that's going on and just know that I'm going to get really nice images. And, oh, by the way, the thing with those three lenses that I bring, part of the reason why I like them, they all have the clutch manual focus option, the 12 to 40, the 40 to 150, and the 17 millimeter, which I really like in nature to be able to just pull that focusing ring back, go into manual focus mode, have all the distance and the infinity, all those markings there, and just work in that mode. Again, I think that helps me slow down a bit. I think it helps me compose better, helps me study the scene better. Or sometimes there's just a real photography reason why I want to do that. Maybe the autofocus is being fooled by something. So those three lenses, that's another big part of the reason why I like those lenses, is have that manual focus option. The same thing, the same option I have with the Fujifilm, the 50 millimeter has a wonderful manual focus ring that I can go to manual focusing easily as well. So that is something that it's really important to me. The other use, however, for the OM-1, and part of the reason why I like to bring the 17 millimeter f1.8, is that I can put that lens on the camera, put the OM-1 in my peak field pouch, which is, you know, just this little pouch that just goes over my shoulder, and go be a tourist somewhere, go out to eat, go do something where photography isn't the main event, but you want to have a good camera with you in case something happens, that sort of situation. And having the OM-1 with the 17 millimeter f1.8 on there really allows me to have a camera for those situations as well, in addition to, you know, the iPhone 12 Pro Max that's in my pocket. The beauty of Micro Four Thirds, the versatility of Micro Four Thirds, allows me one moment to be shooting birds flying by up in the air with the long lens, and then another moment having a short little lens on there in a field pouch and just, you know, walking to dinner. I just love that versatility, knowing that I'm going to get fantastic shots regardless of the lens that I have on there. So it's an odd couple that really makes a lot more sense when I think about how I want to shoot these days. And the way that I approach my assignments and my work these days is much different than 10 years ago, where I felt like I always had to be ready for absolutely everything. And, you know, I don't know, I just felt like there was more stress before than there is now. Now, more the way I feel is that if I just bring the tools that I love using, I'm going to come away with good shots. And it's working out that way. It's working out that way. And I'm not stressing about it. I'm just having fun, enjoying this odd couple that I'm taking out into nature. Those of you that are joining me on the Eastern Sierra Workshop or the Oregon Coast Workshop, you'll get to see this kit. And, you know, we can talk more about your approach, because if you are just picking cameras and lenses that you love and not stressing about so much, you know, are you ready for every possible little thing? I'll be curious to hear what you choose. That's going to be some fun conversation. Alrighty, speaking of workshops, let's do a quick update on what remains this season. So we have four events remaining. The infrared photography workshop, the online event in May, that's sold out now. So it's not available, but I'm really looking forward. And it's going to be the next thing that I'm working on coming up next month. You can't wait. It's going to be a blast. So that one's sold out, but we still have three events with seats open. In August, we're doing the Ultimate Black and White Photography Workshop online, and I have three seats available for that. And because it is an online event, we're allowed to have a couple more seats for that. So three are open for Ultimate Black and White in August. Three seats are open for the September Eastern Sierra Photography Workshop, and that's a physical event. And then three seats are open for the Oregon Coast Photography Workshop in November. For the September and November workshops, all you have to do is put a deposit down right now to hold your place, so you don't have to pay for the whole workshop. If you're thinking about attending either one of those, you know, you just turn around and those seats can be gone quickly. So I'm just letting you know, three seats available on each of those. And both of those are going to be fantastic workshops. I'm preparing for them right now, and just coming off the Humboldt event where I had a great time. You can learn about all of these by clicking on workshops on the digital story, or by going to thenimblephotographer.com and clicking on workshops there. And all the details will be listed out for you, and you can reserve your place there as well. This is something new that I'm going to do, and this actually came out of a conversation that we had up in Humboldt, and this is called My Favorite Adventure. So this is going to be a series that I do for a bit, My Favorite Adventure. How it came about is we were standing around talking, and people love to ask me a lot of questions when we're in lab about, oh, I remember when you did this, or I remember when you did that, can you tell us more about it? And so I would tell them more about it. And we were kind of joking that we were calling these kinds of stories, you know, back in the day. A number of folks said, you know, you should tell these stories on the podcast. You know, people would enjoy it. I would enjoy hearing them. And I started thinking about it and I go, yeah, why not? Right? It'd be kind of fun. So this will be a semi-regular series that you'll hear every now and then where I take a really cool adventure or photo assignment that I had in the past and just sort of tell you more about it. So the first one I'm going to start out with is the 2008 Beijing Olympics that I was there working both in the media center and then out in the field during some of the events as well. And this was honestly one of the coolest events I've ever done. And I have some other really fun ones to talk about, but the thing about this was it was the exoticness of being in Beijing during the Olympics, which was, you know, one thing that was just amazing unto itself. The second was the photographers I was getting to work with. So I got the gig in the media center through a combination of Apple and Kodak. So this was the last year that Kodak was running the media center. And then Apple was involved also because they had loaded Aperture as well as Photo Mechanic and Photoshop, of course, on all the computers there. And they needed an Aperture specialist, or they needed multiple Aperture specialists to be working in the media center to help photographers who wanted to learn more about it or give it a try. Originally, that was my ticket in. I got there to be a helper in the media center, to work in the media center. And so that first part of it was really fun because, you know, and I had to obviously help them with Photoshop and Photo Mechanic and all that other stuff as well. But it was just fascinating to me to be in there, to watch these photographers come in from events with a card load of pictures from some amazing thing that just happened, whether it was, you know, the basketball tournament or swimming or whatever. And then just like see these pictures flashing on the screen, watching their process as they try to sort through them, how much they image edited or how much they didn't, and then, you know, what they saved them as, how they sent them along. I mean, the whole thing was fascinating. And you would think that there would be some real consistency among the photographers, and there wasn't. I mean, it was just all over the map. And of course, then I was there to help them, you know, if they wanted to do something specifically that they maybe knew how to do but just couldn't remember at the moment. And when you're in a rush, sometimes even things that you know how to do but haven't done for a while kind of elude you. And it's just helpful to have someone there to say, hey, how do I do this? And you just tell them and they don't have to look it up or do all that kind of stuff. So since I wasn't under pressure, it was easy for me to remember how to do most of that stuff. But then I also got to shoot events, and this was another dimension altogether. Got to shoot women's volleyball, which was, for me, beach volleyball, which for me was fantastic. It was a fun event. The U.S. won the gold medal in the Beijing Olympics, so, you know, we were doing great as a country. Hanging out with the other photographers who do this all the time, it was truly, truly amazing, and I love the pictures that I got and loved being out there and being able to mix it up. So I got to do that. And then I would go back to the media center, right, and work on my images there. And sometimes I'd be working on it and someone need help. And so I would just do double duty. So some of the fun side notes about how this whole thing worked. First of all, since a lot of us wanted to see, you know, some of the sites in China as well as work, the way they did that is that we would work a 12-hour shift and then we get 12 hours off. 12-hour shift and then 12 hours off. So that way, if we wanted to do something during the 12 hours off, we could. And so what you end up doing is not sleeping very much, right? So that you could go to Forbidden City or the Great Wall or, you know, any of those things that you wanted to do. And if you had a media pass, you could ride all the subways and everything, all the trains for free. Just you walk on with the pass and that's all you needed. We would work a 12-hour shift, maybe grab a quick nap, you know, like an hour or two, and then hit the destinations and do that. So figuring, look, I can sleep when I get back to the U.S. Pretty deep into the assignment, I was really ragged, really running out of gas. And I was on the subway. It was crowded. There were no seats. And a bunch of people were standing up. And I was exhausted. And I actually think I was coming back from the Forbidden City. So I was standing there and I was holding the rail. And I was falling asleep standing up. Holding the rail. You know, I kind of catch myself and then I fall back asleep. I was just so tired. There was this family that was seated. And it was the father, the mother, and then they had a daughter. And a little girl, she was only about 4 years old at the time. And so he had noticed me falling asleep. And so he came up to me, tapped me on the shoulder, and he just motioned, would I like to sit down? Well, there wasn't enough room for me to sit down unless one of them got up. So what he did was he had the daughter get up. Then he just sat me down. It was almost like he wasn't asking me to sit down. He's just saying, you need to sit down. Maybe he didn't want me to fall over onto someone. You need to sit down. And then he put his daughter on my lap. He put his daughter on my lap. And she was adorable. And so there I am, you know, with this little girl on my lap. And she's just looking at me and kind of smiling. And she puts her arm around the back of my neck and just hangs on to me while we're riding the subway. I'm still falling in and out of sleep. She falls asleep on me. And, you know, we're doing this ride for probably another 20 minutes before I got to my destination. My destination was before theirs even. Fortunately, I woke up in time to get off. And I just thought, this is so sweet. This is why we travel and meet other people in the world that we may have formed incorrect opinions about. This man did not know me from anyone. Clearly, I was an American. And he puts his daughter on my lap and is perfectly fine with that so that I don't have to fall asleep standing up. So I will never forget that. I mean, I had a lot of moments at the Olympics I will never forget, the opening ceremonies being one of them. But that particular moment will stay with me forever as a very positive thing that happens and how sweet people can be no matter where you are in the world. I came back from the Olympics and exhausted, but very happy. Images that I have just enjoyed for the years. And I lost 15 pounds during my time in Beijing because, well, honestly, that type of Chinese food isn't really something that I enjoy very much. And so there wasn't a lot for me to eat. In the media center, there was the McDonald's, which, you know, was great, but you can't eat McDonald's all the time, right? So I ended up losing 15 pounds. So I came back lighter, very tired, but very happy. And it was truly one of my great photo experiences. So I have more of these that I'll share off and on over the coming weeks. But that was my first installment for my favorite adventure series. I hope you liked it. The new podcast studio is online. Hip, hip, hooray. Just a quick note. First of all, thank you so much for bearing with me during this transition. I'm renovating upstairs at the photography studio. And so I basically had to tear apart the recording room. It's still in disarray, still working on it. And I didn't really have anywhere to record. So I was just recording anywhere I could. And so I understand that the audio quality has been all over the map, and I thank you for bearing with me and not complaining during this period. But now I have the new setup ready to go, and now we'll get back, as long as I'm in Santa Rosa, now we'll get back to a lot more consistent audio, and I'm thrilled about it, and I'm sure your ears will be happy about it too. I'll still do recording in the car and places like that when I'm on the road. That just comes with it. But when I'm in Santa Rosa now, I have my consistent setup again, and I'm just thrilled about it. Thank you so much for bearing with me during this transition. I'll be done with the upstairs renovation probably by summer, but I got this part. This part was a priority, and it's done now, and I couldn't be happier. All right, let's take care of a little Virtual Camera Club news. Big thanks to our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support this podcast month in and month out. Thank you so much, guys and gals. I depend on you for so many things, not only to help pay the bills here for this podcast, but to also help me go in the right direction and for me to bounce ideas off. I get so many ideas. I mean, half the things that came out of today's podcast came out of conversations, sometimes with Inner Circle members, sometimes with workshop members. And then, you know, I think about what you guys and gals say, and a lot of it just ends up here in the show, and it makes the show better. So this is just a good thing all the way around. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Take a look at the site, and hopefully you will become part of this elite group in 2022. Big thanks to all of our current Inner Circle members. Wanted to remind you that I have affiliate links for both B&H Photo and Amazon on all the pages of the Digital Story. If you're going to make a purchase from either of those places, if you just go to the Digital Story first, click on either the B&H tile or the Amazon tile, that's in the second column, and then do your search, then do your shopping. That helps support the podcast, and I truly appreciate it. And finally, a big thanks to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. So another idea that came out of our Humboldt's Redwoods workshop. This was a very energetic group. I love talking with them, and I really came away with so many things to think about. But they really want me to do a printing workshop. It'll probably be an online printing workshop, because that's just a bit more practical. And it will probably show up in the 2023 season. So I went to Red River Paper. I talked to Drew about this, Drew Hendricks. And he said, I'm on board. Let's do it. Just let me know what you need. And one of the things that I want is each week during the workshop, I want to have a printing specialist be a guest for that session, for that class session, where people can ask questions and get some tips and tricks from people that live, breathe, and eat printing. And Red River Paper has access to many, many of those people. So I'm just really starting to get excited about this idea, but I just love it that I can go to them with ideas like this. You know, they're going to provide paper, they're going to provide expertise. It's just fantastic to have partners like this. Red River Paper, they have a tile on every page of the Digital Story. Click on it, take a look around, see what you think, get some paper, and start making some beautiful artwork. And they also have a rockin' Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Come back and join me next Tuesday. Until then, stay safe, be creative. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.